The sales robots have taken over, and they're decimating deals left and right, destroying them right in their tracks. On the AI for Sales podcast, our mission is to empower everyday sellers to embrace AI superpowers to build new bridges and crush quota. Dr. Joel Aban said it best in the AI for Sales book, "In sales, time kills deals. In AI for Sales, AI kills time." Join our hosts as we learn from the C-suite of the world's fastest growing companies about how you can leverage AI today to transform your sales revenue engine while being the best version of you.
Hey everybody, Chad Burmeister, and I am the host of the AI for Sales podcast. Today I'm with Tukan Das, and I got to tell you, I have a warm place in my heart for Das because he was my original co-founder 20 years ago at a company, Tathagata Dasgupta, and he went by Das. So, and it turns out they're from the same region in India. So, Tukan, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you, Chad. Looking forward to this chat.
It was so good to see you a few weeks ago in Scottsdale, Arizona again after so many months of non-travel that I think a lot of people were excited to be there.
I agree. And for me personally, I've never been to Arizona before. I fell in love with Scottsdale, man, especially that time of the year. It's beautiful.
Yeah, the Phoenician is a really nice place, and the renovations they've done there are just fabulous.
Awesome.
So to help our audience get to know you, I like to kind of rewind the tape and go back to childhood and say, what was your thing like when you were a kid? You know, some people play Frisbee, some people run in the woods. Did you have a thing? What was your passion at that age?
Yeah, growing up in India, most kids, the thing that their passion is cricket. That's religion. So I played a lot of cricket. I was a school team captain, and at one point I even thought of going professional, but then I quickly realized my level. So that was the passion. Outside of that, there was one thing that I was always very interested in was some form of entrepreneurship. I didn't even realize what it was, but I'll tell you a story. Like growing up when I was, I think 7 or 8 years old, me and a couple of my friends, we started a service where we would write down stories or incidents that were happening in our neighborhood in a piece of paper. There were no printers, and we would hand it over to people. And at that time, my idea was local news, like news happening in the community. Very small, very, very micro. So that was also a passion. I never thought that, you know, I'll go to pursue an entrepreneurship, but outside of cricket, that was my side passion.
Wow. I remember when I went to Calcutta, it was playing on the television all the time.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, 24/7, I would say.
Oh, cricket is the sport, yeah.
Yeah, that's interesting. It's kind of like soccer is to Europe as football is to America, and
yes,
each country kind of has its unique sport, and that's it.
Yep.
Okay, so the next kind of personal question is, if that younger cricket playing, you know, kid that was starting to think about entrepreneurship came into the room right now and said, "Hey, Tukan, great to see you," what do you think he would say about where you've gotten in life?
Yeah, I think he'd be very happy. He'd be happy because I remember my mom used to tell me growing up, one of the things I used to do was I used to play this pretend in our living room that was my office. And I was chatting with people. That was me pretending when I was a kid. So he'd be very happy to see. I don't have an office. This is the recording room. I sit outside. But I do have a desk. I have like people working with me. So he'd be very happy with that. That subconsciously there was always this idea of being your own boss and being an executive and working with people that you have fun with. So he'd be very happy.
Yeah, that's awesome. Love it. Well, let's talk LeadSift for a bit.
Sure.
So thinking you've been around for 9 years.
Yep.
You have a lot of deployments that are out there.
Yep.
And intent is a big word these days. And it seems like in the first year or two, it was like, well, you know, this is kind of what the space does. But now it's been really honed in. Help our audience understand, you know, from your perspective, what is intent?
Yeah.
And how do companies leverage intent data effectively?
Sure. I will speak from the sense of B2B businesses and intent. So if you think of intent, the basic idea of intent is predicting when an organization or a person within an organization is in market for a specific product or service. That is what intent is. Like, this company has an intent to buy, right? Like, that's what it is. Now, the reality is a large amount of B2B buying decisions for enterprise sales doesn't happen with a solitary person making a decision. It's a very complex, nuanced process of someone buying, making a buying decision. Now, because it's such a complex thing, there is no one single source of data that says, hey, you know, I can tell you, James at Pfizer is definitely going to buy this next-gen firewall system in the next 3 months. There isn't anything. Unless they come to you and tell you, hey, I'm interested. But less than 2% of your market tells you that as an inbound lead. So what this industry was created, I think got really popular, was this idea was, well, buyers are showing these signals of interest or behaviors even before coming to me, filling out a form, and less people are filling out forms these days. So we need to get ahead of the game and predict when they start showing intent so that we can reach out to them with our sales and marketing message. And that's where the whole idea of intent came. And that's really, if you strip out all the jargons and everything, intent data's promise is for B2B is predicting when an organization is in market for your product or service at a given time.
And there's real value for the buyer and the seller, right? I can tell you beyond a reasonable doubt, I've been showing some buying signals personally on the web recently. And there's at least, you can see the companies that get it because you start seeing really relevant emails. You see a Facebook ad. Like when people say, oh, Facebook is listening to me. Well, yeah, it is, but it's just not through your voice. That's it's listening to you through your clicks and in clicks in other places that are completely unrelated to Facebook, for example.
So this is one thing that I would like to tell. The company that has figured out a way to capture and fulfill intent is Google. Mm-hmm. And I'll tell you why. When you are looking to buy something, the number one action that you do is you go to Google and do a Google search. Whether it's a new software, a new service, a landscaping company, whatever. So you have an intent, you go to Google, you search for it, you see results, and you click. And now here's the thing. Google has this massive amount of data that knows when to capture intent, but they're never selling that data to anyone. As a marketer, you cannot go to Google and say, hey, Google, tell me all the people that have searched for a marketing automation software in the last 100 days. Google's going to say, forget about it. The answer Google will say is put an ad, buy an ad, so that when someone searches, I'll show your ad. But I'm never going to tell you who that is. Now, that is great, and that's why Google is a multi-billion dollar business, and that's why every marketing organization spends majority of their dollars on Google, even on Facebook. Now, that's one form of intent that I think that is a very strong form of intent and that Google has figured out to capture. But if you take it outside, you cannot just wait passively on Google to show your ad to someone and them clicking and something. So you have to be proactive. To be proactive, you cannot just go, you know, spray and pray and reach out to everyone that you think could buy. That's where really these intent data tools, which Leadshift is one of them, comes to use, is saying, you know what? You can literally go to an intent data solution and say, hey, Leadshift, tell me all the companies that have researched about SalesLoft or Outreach or are showing interest about a sales engagement platform. And Leadshift would look at a whole bunch of different sources, or any intent data provider would do that, would look at a whole bunch of sources and give you a ranked list of companies that they think are in market to buy. They don't know of you. They might not even, but they are actively thinking about it. Now you as the seller, you take that data and then you craft your message to reach out to them at the right time with the right message because you know they have researched about it. Does it mean they're going to buy your solution? you never know. If someone says they're guaranteed going to buy, that's a BS. But there's a higher likelihood, because you're basing this, when you're reaching out or engaging or running marketing strategies or targeting, you're basing on some data that is claiming to predict these people are likely to be in market.
Well, I remember Vorsight. If you remember Steve Richard, I'm sure you probably heard of
him. Oh, from Exec Vision, is he?
Yeah.
Okay.
His prior company to that did outsourced SDR, BDR work, Vorsight. Okay. And at Vorsight, they did an analysis, and I think this came from Gartner, one of the big players, but to your earlier point, 2% are in market today. Another 46% of the pie will be in market within the next year. Yep. And then there's half or more of the pie won't be in market for the next year. So if we can identify the signals that are coming from the 46%,
true,
it's better than when they're at the 2%. Because by the time they're at 2%, you might catch them at the right time, but you missed the boat. You didn't get to set the help them build the requirements and, you know, be the first in the door.
100%. Yeah, and the number that we have also heard we use is, you know, that 2-3% are actively in market. There's about 40% that are thinking about it. They're problem aware, starting to do research, and the rest don't care because they already bought a solution. They don't have that pain and things like that. Intent Data's promise is to help you uncover who that 40% is, and every day that 40% changes. Some of that 40% people that are thinking of buying, they move out of that. Some of the others move in. So you need to constantly monitor it to get those signals so that you are on top of that.
Well, and if you think about the downstream repercussions of trying to sell to the 100%,
sure,
is that your half of your time is wasted on precisely the wrong people. So if you look at the cost of a dial, we know, because we sell on per unit basis sometimes and serve customers, it costs normally customers $10 for one dial. And let's say you do three dials against one of the 50 that you shouldn't be calling. So you've just done $30 worth of dials into a person that you should not have called. Now, if you do an email, that might cost you 50 cents to a dollar. By the time you amortize the cost of a BDR or an AE, the emails are 30 to 50 cents. The dials are 10 bucks. The social connection, if they do 2-3 LinkedIn requests a day, which they should be doing 50, by the way.
Sure,
but
yes.
Most people do 2 or 3. And so if you're paying $10 to $20 per LinkedIn request, just run the math. You're throwing hundreds of dollars out the window by focusing on the other 50 that you shouldn't be focused on.
That is fascinating. I never thought of equating that dollar value to a dial and things like that. See, that makes an even stronger use case why you should be focusing on the right accounts. There's another side sort of lateral benefit to this. And we were chatting with the lead SDR manager of Rainforest QA, Jake Bisker. He's now at Yahoo. One of the things he mentioned was when they were using LeadSift, they were getting 100% increase on meetings booked, because that's what they're measuring. But the one side benefit they said was the motivation of business development reps. You give them 100 cold leads and say, go figure, reach out, email, dial, LinkedIn, whatever, book a meeting, versus you give them a targeted list, whatever you get. And if from the targeted list, they book more meetings, it is way more motivating. It pumps them up because it is a gruesome, tiring job when you're just doing cold outreach. So knowing when to reach out, and the moment you start seeing better traction, it's a great motivation. I don't know if you can quantify that somehow in a dollar value, but that is also a benefit of this.
Well, yeah, I'm sure you can, because I'm helping a company staff 12 people. We're at a goal of 9 of 12 right now in three weeks. So we use our own techniques to reach out to people at scale, interview them, and bring them on quickly. One of the benefits that this company that I'm working for, they've been around 100 years.
Wow.
So people that would maybe want to work for them would say, well, I'm not sure. I kind of prefer a technology sale. But they know that we're the company that's building out the tech stack. Yes. Therefore, we're able to hire 9 people in 3 weeks. And so similar concept, right? If you're having a hard time hiring reps, and you're in a traditional business or even non-traditional, if you tell them, hey, you're going to get a HubSpot login and that's it, you just click a button and dial and you, no tools, no positive leads,
yeah,
then you're not going to get them in the first place. That's why I've talked to another company. It's taken them 7 months and they still have 7 open headcount on a goal of 9. And I'm like, yeah, you've only hired 2 because you're not giving them the good leads and the good technology.
So true. So true. Yeah. So, right. Yeah.
All right. Talk to me about where AI plays a role in this process that we're talking about. Is it actively being used, artificial intelligence, and how?
Yeah. So my background for the audience is in natural language processing and information retrieval. So I'm one thing I want to clarify to the audience is I think AI these days are used pretty loosely. Anyone that is running a basic classification task is saying, oh, we are using AI, because I think your valuation goes up and people just think, wow. At LeadSift, we use AI at a few different stages. The first one that we use actively is if I see a piece of content, we use artificial intelligence to figure out what are the main themes of this content. Is this content about firewall or event management system, or is this piece of content about Hopin laying off 500 people? Because if someone is reading an article about Hopin laying off 500 people, they're not showing interest about Hopin. That is a news article. As an example. So one of the first things we do is classify that from any English text. So that's one way of using AI. The other way we, and it's super important, right? Because that information is downstream impacted on the score. So if you just said, oh, these guys laid off 500 people, and you're like, oh, they're researching on Hopin, go talk to them. That is a wasted effort. The other way we do it is how we combine different signals to predict the likelihood of buying. So for example, a signal of intent, buying intent for B2B is if they're researching about a competitor, researching about a keyword, if they're hiring for certain signals, or certain roles, are they attending industry events? Did they recently start using a tech stack? When did they raise funding? And then taking all of that and then building it into a model that spits out a score between 0 to 100, that's the other part. That's the other part where we use intent AI to combine that score and making that prediction, saying, hey, this is a 63% likelihood of them being in market because we have looked at all these signals and normally they don't show these signals. So this is outside of the normal behavior. So those are two places that I can think of the top of my head that we use true AI.
Yeah, that's thank you for the clarification, because I think you're right. A lot of people think of an automation task as an AI, and
right?
Sure, one could draw a broad stroke around that, but real AI is really what we're talking about here. So if you didn't have those two that you just talked about, does the company even exist?
No.
Or it doesn't, right?
No. And yeah. I mean, our company, a lot of companies, like, it's based on the IP that you have built. That is our IP, is analyzing text and then making sense of it. Just for the audience, there is a website. It's still a free tool. It's called fingerprint.leadsift.com. Go check it out. As an example, one of the things you do is you can enter your Twitter user ID. We used to do Instagram, but we do Twitter now. You just enter your Twitter handle, or you can enter anyone's Twitter handle. And in real time, it will tell you what your personality is, what your age is, what your net worth is, and what are the brands you are most likely to buy products from, as an example. Wow. All of that by looking at the way you talk, who you talk to, who you follow, your brand affinity, right? So again, that is an example of AI that we have built.
Well, I remember going to a conference and the keynote speaker talked about AI for 30 I think it went on for 45 minutes and it was the most amazing talk I've ever heard. And he said that if you like Madonna on Facebook, then it's something like a 94% chance you're a Democrat. Yep. If you like Garth Brooks, then it's something like 86% chance you're Republican.
Yep.
So if you start to layer upon
yep.
these different algorithms, go up 94, plus this one, plus that one, very, very quickly, you can start to say, oh, this is who that person is.
I'll give you another example that we did with this. One of the things was predicting the age of the person based on how they talk. Wow. Based on you talk, we can predict. And there was two interesting stats we found out, and you'll find it funny. So one of our age brackets was 18 to 24, 24 to 35, 35 above, and so on and so forth. The number one indicator of you, and this is completely the data speaking, like statistical significance.
I'll edit the signature at the bottom. Cheers or thank you or no?
No. You'll find this interesting. Bieber, if you use the term Bieber, that was the Justin Bieber. That was the biggest indicator of you being 18 to 24. The people above 24 and plus, the most common word they used when they were talking was actually Gmail.
Wow.
Yep. So again, that's the beauty of it. You train a system and the system statistically looking, you label data and the system will say, hey, based on what you're telling me, this is what the trend looks like. And this is just for one of the things. We don't use it. Age detection was used for, you know, for more for B2C side of things. But without AI, we don't exist.
Right. And that's, so that goes into another interesting topic. I'm going to make an introduction to Eliav,
who I mentioned from the bot.io. Sure.
And we talked, he just went to Richard Branson's island recently with a whole bunch of AI experts.
Okay.
And the topic du jour was, how do we avoid in 6 to 10 years AI taking over? And he said the biggest word that came out of that, similar to what you just said with Gmail and others, is transparency. Mm-hmm. Transparency to everything that's going on with it. Because if you black box too much, then biases can make their way in.
Sure.
And ultimately, that could be the demise of everything. So sure. On one hand, it's amazing because you can wipe out biases, and that's awesome, right? We want that. On the other hand, it could hard code in things. And then he also talked about the advanced part is, I may build something for my company that's amazing, but then when it starts to integrate to other different companies and different processes, there's downstream repercussions that I don't even think about.
Yeah.
Like the whole is bigger than the sum of its parts.
Yeah.
And so really, really fabulously interesting conversation.
I'll give you an example. This whole idea of me taking your Twitter user ID and then predicting your psychographics and brand affinities, right? Like what your interest, your age and stuff. Back in the day when we were selling into Fords of the world, there was intent, but not for B2B company. We were helping Ford or Jaguar or MasterCard or LG predict who their buyers were. What did they look like? So people that were looking to showing interest about buying a truck, they were certain versus someone who's looking to buy a new BMW. So, and that was great. But now when you think of from a B2B perspective, there is a lot of privacy concerns around there. It's like, how the hell do you do this? And are you giving this, telling me Chad itself is interested in Dunkin' Donuts and drives a BMW and loves playing music? That information in a B2C context, when you aggregate it, that's great because you are not individual. But when you're giving it the level of an individual, if I upload this in a CRM, there is certain privacy concerns you need to think of as an example. So depending on where that same tech is being used, there are a lot of downstream implications that you have to think of.
Wow. Well, and I've said for the last year and a half on this podcast that we need to come up with a new role called the CEO, but it's CEO 2.0, which is Chief Ethics Officer. Around this type of technology.
Yeah, we do. Using that word E word ethics is a fine line, right? Like for example, when startups are doing tech, ethics sometimes, at least related with the data and privacy, sometimes takes a backseat. And the reason is it's so competitive, and this might be a controversial thing. It's so competitive. You would try to do. There's a difference between breaking rules and breaking law.
Yes.
A startup will always, you have to break rules and figure it, but not break law. So the ethics piece is important, but sometimes the lines blur.
Yeah. Well, just like regulation comes in on everything.
Right.
It feels like we're kind of in the early non-regulated days. And
yes,
over the coming course of months and years, there'll be some level of regulation.
So, for sure. Yeah. I mean, especially in Europe. Europe is ahead of this in terms of regulation with the GDPR and things like the US is sort of a little bit like the wild, wild west.
That's right.
But we'll see.
Yeah. Well, once you understand the algorithm of a large swath of people and how they tend to behave based on the groupings, like you just talked about, if you know that I'm a certain personality based on my Twitter feed and all my information, if I say something in a certain way to cause you to purchase or make buying behaviors, man, you can change a lot of people's,
100%. I'll give you an example of this psychographic thing. We're digressing a little bit, but talking about the power of AI. One of our sales guys was chatting with someone on LinkedIn. He was an account executive at a big company that we were trying to sell, one of the sales enablement firms. And we entered his Twitter handle on fingerprint, and we found out he is massively interested in music. He was a part-time DJ, we found out. So the number one interest was music. We sent him a $50 Spotify gift card through whatever gifting platform. We just sent it to him rather than sending something. He was the champion. We closed this deal for 3 years. We made $75,000 out of this client. But as an AI piece, just knowing what your preferences are, like for example, I'm seeing you are interested in skateboarding and guitar, for example. If Riverside is recording this, it's pretty easy to detect the image recognition out of this. So I can safely assume you like music. If I have to sell to you and I lead with music as an example, because I found it through data, right? Automagically, you are more likely to like me or my message. You're a little bit curious. Will you buy from me? I don't know. At least you'll take a meeting. I'll have a better engagement.
It builds the trust bucket up.
Right?
And after all, the trust bucket is how people buy from each
right?
other.
Absolutely, yeah. Yes. So, yeah.
Very interesting. Well, to kind of wrap up, before we wrap up, what do you think about AI and sales 2 years from now, five years from now? You know, where's this headed as an industry?
I think that one thing that I'm personally very interested in is this whole concept of GPT-3, which was released by Microsoft, and there is already being work done leveraging GPT-3 to craft ad copies, like figure out what kind of automated, like you put in a website and it'll print out the copy of the ad. I think that GPT-3 will be and should be used in personalizing emails, crafted, fully personalized emails, the perfect subject line based on certain inputs that I get. That would be my bet. I would love to see someone do this right now.
I think it's there. We found the partner and
you
they're,
did?
They're doing it at a very low rate because they want to own the market.
And I think there will be more companies that are doing it because a lot of companies have open source GPT-3, right? GPT-3 is an open source project and you get these versions of it. Google has something else. So you can basically leverage their API to do these kind of things. Then what will really become interesting is if I want to send an email to you right now, I can plug in, you know, your company's name on the website and it'll tell you this company does this and GPT-3 will spit out an email or a LinkedIn message. There is a company that does that. There's probably few. What will be interesting is now rather than just telling me what this company, your company does, I want to plug in your LinkedIn feed to understand what kind of things you talk about, what you care, so that my messaging is not personalized to your company, but to you specifically.
That's right.
I think that is going to happen and I am excited for that.
Well, we're doing a data append right now to 48,000 leads. There's a 60% append rate.
Okay.
And so of the 60%, we get on average 3 personalized sentences for those individuals. We'll serve up that inside of the email app so that before they send, humans in the loop gets to pick one of 3.
That's right.
For the 40% missing data, we have 100 randomized kind of personalized buzzy things. So it's not perfect, but it's better than what most humans could come up with. They've been A/B tested these 100 different lines. And then that helps get through email, whatever that spam filtering
sure.
by having a randomized text. So wow. it's really, really an interesting.
It's definitely going to happen. That I think in sales, that is one of the big things that's going to happen.
Yeah, amazing. Well, what a great conversation. We've definitely went off the path, but that's what I love to do on this podcast, to help people think through where's everything going, what role does ethics play. If people want to get a hold of you and learn more about LeadSift, what would be the best way to do that?
Two places. Go to leadsift.com, check us out. We are a part of Foundry now, which is IDG's new branding. Check us out. And if you want to reach out to me to talk about sales, AI, machine learning, any of that, I'm super active on LinkedIn. Look me up, Tukan Das. And on Twitter, my handle is TDAS, T Das on Twitter. So hit me up. Look forward to chatting with any of you.
But if you go through Twitter, make sure to go to fingerprint.leadsift.com first.
Because that is correct. That is correct. Check, put your, enter your Twitter handle and see, or enter Obama's handle or whichever, your competitors, your friends, and you'll be surprised what kind of data you can pull. True story. I remember this. So when we were first starting up 2012, we were in Silicon Valley. We were pitching to one of these big, large seed stage funds, and we did fingerprint on them. And we found out one of the partners went to a strip club, and his other partner, because it says this is a brand affinity. And his other partner goes, "What the hell is this?" And they're like, "Yeah, man, we went to our friends in Vegas. There was a Foursquare check-in. I don't know how these LeadSift guys picked it up, but yeah, that's a true story. We did not get money from them, but that's not because of that. But it was a lot of fun. Yeah.
Wow, that's awesome. Well, it's you've certainly done some really neat things, and
thank you.
We're excited to try LeadSift on campaign coming up here in the near, not too distant future.
Yes, and for that you will do an A/B test, and we'll do a follow-on episode on that.
That's right. All right, everybody, thanks awesome. For joining another AI for Sale podcast. We've been talking to Tukan Das with LeadSift. Amazing conversation. Good luck in the next iteration of your business.
Thank you, Chad.
Thanks, everybody.
Hey, you made it this far in your AI for Sales journey. Want to augment your sales growth? First, leave us a review and then visit www.scalex.ai to claim your free strategy session today.